It's got a death curse.
So it's bothering me like me.
And then who locked you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Working on something that'll change the world and human life as we know it.
This film was a hard watch for me.
Something happened when you went through, Seth. You've got to get some help.
I'm becoming Brundlefly.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
This is a perfect marriage of sci-fi and horror.
It's definitely the old cautionary tale of when science goes wrong, right? Where, you know, again, like the original said, exploring areas of science that we really should be dabbling in.
Friends, we welcome you back to the Horror 101 show. Since the Twilight Zone episode was long overdue, we decided to hit the ground running on the next show and recorded the day after episode 50 was released. Choosing the subject of this podcast was easy. With the new Ghostbusters film around the corner, our conversation turned to remakes recently, and I was floored when the world-famous Brian Stewart told me that he's never seen David Cronenberg's The Fly, which was a remake of a 1958 horror film of the same name, starring Vincent Price. Now, as far as remakes go, I put The Fly right up there with Carpenter's The Thing. And as soon as Brian heard that, he was immediately interested. Unfortunately, the cult sensation Nick McPherson wasn't able to join us this time around, which is a shame, since sci-fi is really his bag. But we did have over visiting our good friend Jeff Scott, who's a man of very little words, a great guy, but not a very good podcaster. You might hear him chime in every once in a while. And Nude was at a Who concert in the States, but I'm thinking she'll make an appearance towards the end of the show. So with that being said, please sit back and enjoy our Horror 101 treatment of another Canadian film, starring Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis. This is David Cronenberg's The Fly.
Okay, 1986, The Fly, and I only up until recently figured out, Brian Stewart, that you have never seen this film?
You know what? I saw the original from 1958. And no, I was not alive in 58. No. I saw it years later. But no, I saw the original of Vincent Price and Herbert Marshall.
Which I watched again today.
I suspect you saw it for the first time today.
Well, I'd seen most of it before. Yeah, the whole help me fly in the spider's
web. You didn't remember
the
sheet press.
I don't remember the press.
It's odd to see Vincent Price in a non-villain role. And in fact, that movie has no villain.
You know what? I was telling Nude today that he felt like he was being wasted, and I couldn't understand why. I think he just hit the nail on the head. He wasn't the bad guy.
That's right.
He wasn't the guy that turned into the sinister fucking asshole by the end of the shows doing shit to killing people. He's really this guy that's, the whole movie's like, I don't know what's going on. Oh, I love them all so much, and oh, whatever I can do to help, and oh, this is tragic, and oh,
they were completely happy together. They have a wonderful little boy, Philippe, whom they both adore. Lane was always so gentle, it just doesn't make sense.
Dear Lord, you know, why?
That was probably something that endeared him to the movie, because he didn't necessarily like playing villains. He just didn't get an opportunity to play many heroes.
Cronenberg's The Fly, 1986, Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis. This film, I remember, was a hard watch for me.
Yeah.
When I first saw it, I was maybe 12 years old, caught it on cable, and it was a hard watch for me.
In this era, Gina Davis was a hot ticket item, too. She was really quite something, because she had done Beetlejuice in that time frame.
I think this was the movie where Goldblum and Davis decided, you know what, let's get married, because they had already done several films before.
Right.
Earth Girls Are Easy, Transylvania 65,000, which is a great flick. Now, she was fucking hot.
Oh, she was hot.
As the vampire there?
Yeah, absolutely. What did she
do? You know what? And I swear to God, Ed Begley Jr. in that movie has to be fucking gay. Because this Gina Davis is all over him. All over him. And he's like, oh my God, get the fuck away from me. Oh, who's that at the door? I got to get out of here. No, I don't like this. And then at the end, he's like, oh, this is great. I'm like, I don't buy it. You're gay.
What am I working on? I'm working on something that'll change the world and human life as we know it.
Change it a lot or just a bit? You'll have to be more specific.
What, do you want me to be specific here in this room with half the scientific community of North America eavesdropping?
I got $5 says you love this film. $5. Bet me. Not that you hate it.
This movie's horrible.
No.
Give me my $5.
No, not that you'll hate it. You won't even like it. I guarantee you, you will love this film. Let me ask you this. Is anybody really a Cronenberg fan here? Have you guys seen a lot of his films? Do you know what he's about?
You know what? I'll tell you something. I've seen a great deal of what David...
Lynch?
David Lynch. I've seen tons of David Lynch movies. I don't think, outside of Shivers, I'm not entirely sure I've seen another David Cronenberg film.
Scanners? Nope. Videodrome? Dead Ringers? Shivers? Rabid? The Brood?
Dead Zone. I've seen The Dead Zone. There you go.
Well, that's, and there's a Stephen King story.
There you go. History of Violence. Loved it. Yes, there. I've seen two of his movies. History of Violence is not a horror film, though.
No. No, he's been getting off. He's been off the horror for over a decade now. Now he's making weird kind of crime dramas and stuff like that.
Eastern Promises? I heard that was good.
But back in this time, back in the 80s, he made horror films and other films that were really weird. And this is why they kind of call him, I don't agree with this, but I can see where some people might say it.
Canadian Lynch?
Exactly.
Yeah,
they call him a Canadian Lynch because he's making movies where he's not really telling, like Naked Lunch. He's telling you a story, but he's not telling you the exact story. He's using metaphors to kind of get you to figure things out. The Fly isn't like that. The Fly is the first movie where there's no trickery. It's here's the story, and there you go.
I think you're making a mistake. I think you really want to talk to me.
Sorry, I have three other interviews to do before this party's over.
Yep, they're not working on something that'll change the world as we know it.
They say they are.
Yeah, but they're lying. I'm not.
The chemistry between those two characters are great.
Yes.
Like, it starts off immediately. They're at a party. He's a scientist. How about you talk to me? Because I got this thing that'll blow your fucking mind. Yeah, whatever. Everybody in this room's got the same thing to say. No, come see it. And she does. And it's like, this is huge. Yes, I told you it was fucking huge.
Yeah.
Your stocking has just been teleported from one pod to another, disintegrated there and reintegrated there. It'll change the world as we know it, right?
Joke's on you, Brundle. You just disclosed all this shit to a very ambitious journalist.
Oh, no.
You knew that.
Don't you dare write a story. I'd never have told any of this stuff to a journalist.
But you did tell this stuff to a journalist.
Well, yeah, in a way, I suppose I did. That
sure did.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, come here. What about your stock?
Keep it for good luck.
And this is Canadian. This is about as fucking Canadian as you can get. There's a Purolator courier truck goes by.
How odd was it that the original was set in Montreal? I mean, really? A major Hollywood studios film being set in Montreal in the 1950s?
That makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense that this would be a Canadian story as well.
Yeah.
Fortunately for Brundle, Veronica's editor Stathis, who also happens to be her ex-boyfriend and we'll be getting back to him later, he thinks that Seth is a con man. He's not going to print this shit. He doesn't believe this teleportation rap for 2 seconds. But Brundle wants to disclose his secret, and he believes Veronica should be the one to do it.
You should tell it. Let me become your major project. I'm talking about a book, not a magazine article. Follow me and my work day by day in as much detail as you can stand. Complete record of the most earth-shattering invention ever. The one that ended all concepts of transport, of borders and frontiers, of time and space. And your book will end with me transporting myself 15 feet through space from one telepod to another. That's what's really missing. Wait for me that long?
I like how Cronenberg picked two people. I think he casted these two people in particular because he knew that at the time they had a real romance.
Right.
He wanted two people that, you know what? If you guys got something for each other, then it's going to translate to the screen perfectly. And it did.
Yeah. It's definitely the old cautionary tale of when science goes wrong, right? Where, you know, again, like the original said, exploring areas of science that we really should be dabbling in.
The baboon was the ultimate warning. Don't fucking go through.
Yeah.
You know, this shit is new.
Why didn't it work?
I think it turned the baboon inside out. It can't deal with flesh. It only seems to work with inanimate objects, nothing that's living.
Something about the field generated by a living organism. Nothing dead will go.
Computers are dumb. They only know what you tell them. I must not know enough about the flesh myself. I'm going to have to learn.
You know, it's an old tale. It used to be the old Faustian bargain, the tale of sorcery, right? You don't damper with certain magics because, you know, they'll do you wrong. Well, you know, it's been translated to be you don't go into certain areas of science because meddling with nature can go horribly wrong.
After 6 years of working on this project, the final hurdle, that is successfully teleporting living beings, is finally achieved.
Oh, God, Seth. It's really happened. You did it. You'll never have to get car sick again.
Or air sick or seasick.
I know. Or tricycle sick.
After the first, I'd say, 40% of the movie, I want good things for these people. I want him to succeed. I want him to be rich and get the Nobel Prize and change science as we know it. And I want her documenting it and them to fucking go and have this nice, rich life together. But no, because he makes one fucking petulant act. It all falls down like a fucking house of cards. Yep, yeah. It was very tragic.
Steph is born. This is her old boyfriend. She's working for her old boyfriend. Now she runs out late at night to see him. Or is this the Ronnie game? I didn't mean to kill your brother, but he didn't die in vain, if that's of any comfort. And as the general said, there's nothing I'd ask you to do that I wouldn't do myself, boys. What are we waiting for? Let's do it.
Don't get drunk when you have access to teleportation pods that you have tested thoroughly.
No gene splicing under the influence. That's a no-no.
Nothing good can come from this. There's a fucking fly in the pod, genius!
But I like the look of the transformation pods. I like the way they sealed and the look of them.
Like an egg.
Yeah.
Yeah?
It looked like alien technology, didn't it?
Yeah. Don't you think a bright guy like Brundle might have programmed the computer to say, hey, you know, before we do anything, why don't you do a scan of whatever's in there? And if you think there might be an issue, cease operation and you let me know about it. And yeah. I'll let you know whether or not we can go through.
They actually do clarify that a bit because beforehand, he states that computers are pretty stupid. He actually says they only know what we tell them. And so, yeah, I mean, precautions like that, maybe that ever crossed his mind. Yeah,
exactly.
I went through last night.
You went through? Without testing the baboon?
I was drunk. I was a bit upset.
I like how in the beginning, the side effects were positive. Great strength, lots of energy, very optimistic, you know, and then deterioration.
Yeah. You know what? Like I was saying, as we were watching, I thought it was almost like a Stan Lee origin story. He could have gone on to be Flyman. This could have been a superhero movie had it not, you know, all of a sudden turn and become twisted.
Hey, watch out. He's chocolate bars.
Yeah, so I noticed.
If any of you have ever sustained damage from an arm wrestle that went bad, you may want to look away for this one.
Oh, let's get to the arm trauma. When he's at the bar picking up the girl and the strong man there.
I did not expect to see a full-blown compound fracture in a movie, especially in the 80s. This had to be a hard R rating. Like, how they got that past the censorship? I mean, wow.
And then the blood dripping on the table as the guy sounds... He sounds like a little fucking girl.
Yeah.
I'm like, that probably fucking hurts, eh, buddy?
Okay. That's it. You're going to like it.
I don't want to. I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid.
No. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
And that's where there was another famous line from this movie when Gina Davis says, no, be afraid.
Be very afraid.
That gets repeated time and time again. Was that the genesis of that one?
I doubt it, but...
I don't know. It could have been.
It worked.
Yeah, because you hear that all over the place. Everyone repeats that line.
According to IMDb, Brian Stewart is completely correct. I was wrong. This was the first movie to coin that phrase.
You're changing, Seth. Everything about you is changing. Those weird hairs that were growing out of your back, I took them to a lab. I had them analyzed.
Yeah, that's a strange thing to do.
Not as strange as the results. The guy at the lab had trouble identifying them. He finally came to the conclusion that they were definitely not human. In fact, very likely insect hairs.
That's silly. That's ridiculous.
Look. Now there's more. Look at your face. Something happened when you went through, Seth. You've got to get some help. I think you must be sick.
The transformation was very gradual, but it wasn't overplayed. The sprouting of the hairs through the wound was a nice touch. Very simple, didn't take much. But then the next time we see her with the woman he picked up at the bar, and there's a few more hairs. In the original, the transformation of the scientist character
was immediate.
He's full fly, but he's all covered up. So
the head and the arm was.
Yeah, the head and the arm. He kept his hand in his lab coat pocket.
Right.
And his cloth, that cloth over his head. In this one, we get the body horror elements that we didn't get in the original, probably due to budgetary constraints and technological limitations, right?
Look at me. Does this look sick? Does this look like a sick man to you?
No! Stop it!
You know any sick men who can do that? Come here.
Help! Seth!
Heels off! I don't need you anymore.
Wait! Seth, please! Wait! Seth!
Don't come back!
After throwing Ronnie out, Seth notices changes in him that he cannot ignore. The euphoria and purity he once felt after being teleported has gone. He begins falling apart, and after querying the data of his experiment from the computer, he realizes the horrible truth.
A fly got into the transmitter pod with me that first time when I was alone. The computer got confused. There weren't supposed to be two separate genetic patterns, and it decided to splice us together. It made it as me and the fly. We hadn't even been properly introduced.
Made it so painful, too, is that he continued to be likable even through the transformation, that he was still attempting some degree of charm with his gallows humor and the way he, because he was still trying to be somewhat flippant about it.
My teleporter turned into a gene splicer. A very good one. Now I'm not Seth Brundle anymore. I'm the offspring of Brundle and Housefly.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Seth.
You look so pretty.
What happened?
Oh, I think it's showing itself as a bizarre form of cancer. Just gonna disintegrate. In a novel way, no doubt. Yeah, and then I'll die. And then it'll be over.
You know, there's that kind of sick, deprecating kind of humor that he still has, that he still has some of his wits about him, that he still has the presence of mind to try to be somewhat charming, even though everything's falling to pieces, right? So he's still likable, and he's going through hell, you know? So, beautiful performance.
I know what you're thinking. I can hear it. Where's all the horror? Please don't worry, because the gloves are about to come off. This is David Cronenberg we're dealing with here. The man and his crew have the talent to satisfy the suspense enthusiasts as well as the gore hounds. He's a specialist at bizarre gore, and from this moment, the fly spins into madness. The final 15 minutes of this movie is some of the most violent, frenzied, chaotic filmmaking ever to come out of a major studio. You just wait.
This is a perfect marriage of sci-fi and horror. A perfect marriage.
It plays on the body horror of sickness really well, because all the elements early on are indications of his transformation are similar to those we'd see in cancer or in knowable, you know, afflictions, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, like boils and shit like that.
You know, hair coming out or
loss
teeth
of
falling
movement,
out.
Lethargy.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the lethargy's gone and he's like, you know what? Yeah, I'm just being transformed into something else. That ain't so bad. And it's like, you're losing your fucking mind.
I'm becoming Brundlefly. Don't you think that's worth a Nobel Prize or two?
Puking on the donut? Blah. Oh, that's disgusting. Yes. Yes, that's disgusting. The fuck is wrong with you?
How does Brundlefly eat? Brundlefly breaks down solids with a corrosive enzyme.
playfully called vomit drop. He regurgitates on his food, it liquefies, and then he sucks it back up. Ready for demonstration, kids? There it goes.
They don't show him sucking it back up, though.
That Thank Christ for that.
Yeah.
You notice they cut away when he's doing the informational video. Hey, kids, you want to see how Brundlefly eats a donut? They cut away, and all you can do is hear the disgusting sound effects. And I'm thinking, you know what? Those sound effects with our imagination is far worse.
My God.
Just hear the... I'm like, oh, God, I don't even want to see what's up. Thank you. Thank God you cut away.
Not just that, but you can see Statha sit there going, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, he's horrified.
Look at his face.
Like, you look, fucking slurping noises. Oh, you're like, God. Yeah.
Look don't at all the junk food.
You really eat this stuff? Hey, guess who's pregnant with Brundlefly baby?
You know what? The abortion scene was really well done.
That was David Cronenberg. He was the doctor.
Yeah, he was the doctor.
Give us a push. You can push it out. Come on. That's it. Come on.
No, wait. No.
You can do it.
Oh, wait. Oh.
No! You're not initially aware of it being a nightmare at all. It yeah, looks exactly. legit. And that could have actually been a true thing. You don't know if it's horror or not. When you see... that when she snaps out of it, wakes up, and you know, we fully appreciate what turmoil she must be going through mentally.
And you know what? That nightmare sequence is probably the one hallmark to his older work, his older nightmarish, bizarre work.
Yeah.
That he kind of threw in there. Well, you know what? This is outside of my wheelhouse. So let's throw in something. Like let's throw touch? In a nightmare sequence, yeah. Something that's not real.
I want a disc. Give me preliminary integration.
I want a disc. Give me preliminary integration.
Well, the computer's telling him, listen, the only way you can get better is if you throw another human in there with you. And it wouldn't have made him perfect. It would have just made him a little bit more human. God knows what would have came out. But in the end, in his crazed insect madness state, that was the only solution. Yeah, right. Get in there.
It's just to muddy the pool by just adding more human to the mix.
Yes.
Yeah, and at the cost of another human life.
Yes.
Yeah, but which is something we'd never considered, huh? But really creepy stuff.
I just... I wanted to see you before.
You have to leave now. And never come back here.
I always loved that line when he's telling her in the moonlight. He's like, listen, insects got no politics. They're brutal. They're cruel. They do not compromise. And I'm becoming that. And you gotta leave because if you stay, I will fucking kill you.
I don't know what you're trying to say.
I'm saying I'm an insect who dreamt he was a man and loved it. But now the dream is over. And the insect is awake.
And he takes it one step further, that he thinks he was an insect all along, they just dreamed he was human.
I'm saying... I'll hurt you if you stay.
You know what? This was a performance that it wasn't enough to put a guy in really good effects, in really good makeup. And it was good makeup. You had to get the speech getting weird, the tics and the fucking wheezes kind of... You could hear it almost like him, like a phlegm glob in the back of his throat as he's breathing. All of that culminated into a great effect that made us believe that this guy was turning into something.
Guess who's back from the States? The Who kicked off their Turning 50 tour in Detroit, Michigan the night we recorded. She'd never seen The Who live before, so she was excited to see them, and now she's back. It's the lovely Nude.
That Nude?
That is Nude.
Nude!
Oh.
Nude just got back from seeing The Who with Joe Louis. Apparently they were throwing joints at her like candy. Here you go. Have a joint.
They were not throwing joints. They were around us.
Here, man.
They were
smoke
getting passed
this.
Around fairly freely, were they?
Because Who fans don't like ganja. That's
every Aerosmith concert I've ever been to was being passed around.
You must be hungry after all that dope. You hit the joints, Helen.
No.
You hit the joint. You're at a fucking Who concert. You hit the joints.
Contact high.
Don't lie to your husband. Don't lie to me. You hit the joints.
I did not.
All throughout this movie, Veronica's ex-boyfriend Stathis is an absolute fucking asshole. You hate this guy. But then, later on in the film, when she's scared and frightened and needs help, this guy rises to the occasion. He redeems himself. He's got a heart, which is a shame. Because now that Seth has absconded with Veronica after she tries to abort their baby, he's got to go back to his lab and get her. And this boy's about to fucking run into the stuff that nightmares are made of.
And her ex-boyfriend freaking suffered. And just when you were, you know, completely sold on the fact that this guy was a complete tool and a borderline freaking, you know, rapist. Like, he was pretty lecherous.
Oh, yeah. He was a chauvinist pig. You didn't like the guy at all.
And then all of a sudden, he kind of turns it around and he starts, you know, when they were in the abortionist office, he was really quite sympathetic, I thought.
Yeah. Towards her, yes. Yeah. Very much so.
And, of course, now that he's... kind of won us over towards the end there. When he suffers, it's like, oh great, just when I started liking the guy.
He pukes acid on the guy's hand and liquefies it down to a bloody fucking stump. Jesus Christ.
That's the scene. I remember when I watched this as a kid, that freaked me out. Like, that stayed with me for at least the rest of the night. When I couldn't stop thinking about that.
It I hate
really bothered me. And then he goes for the leg.
Yeah.
And if you look at the very end of that effect, he's kind of like just slowly retching the foot off of the wound. Just that slowly, methodically, just kind of ripping the... Because you know that foot is hanging on just by a few undigested bits of flesh, and he's kind of ripping it away real slow. That fuck... Every time I watch that, it bothers me. I didn't like that effect at all.
You know what that reminded me of? The boyfriend from the remake of The Blob. Remember the arm coming off?
Yeah.
What is it with you and melting? First of all, it's Raiders.
And you know what? This would have been around the same time where I got the courage to watch Raiders again because it freaked me out. So what is it with melting deaths that just bothers
me? Or the guy from RoboCop.
The guy that did the melting Nazi effect in Raiders of the Lost Ark, his name was Chris Wallace. The guy that did the melting effects in The Fly's name was Chris motherfucking Wallace. This guy certainly educated my fears growing up. Bless your fucking heart, Mr. Wallace.
The guy was in so much pain after the foot that he'd passed out from the pain.
Yeah.
He started screaming and kept screaming, and then he passed out because it hurt so much. And you're like, that must suck.
Oh, yeah.
The direction was perfect.
How many times in a horror movie have you seen somebody actually pass out from the pain? They are either killed before that opportunity happens, or they continue to writhe in screaming frigging agony.
Until they're put out of their misery?
Until they're put out of their misery.
And then he's going for the face, and you must have been like, oh, fuck, don't do it.
Oh, you know what? I was looking forward to it. I wanted to see it.
No, don't. Don't, please.
You know, we'd love to tell you how this film ends, but we just don't have the time, so you're just gonna have to watch the film for yourself. But we will say this. After you witness Brundlefly's final transformation, you will be left with imagery that will not go away easy. It is grim and nasty. This is definitely my favorite David Cronenberg finale.
Do I make my $5?
Yes.
You get your five.
This was very good.
Okay, then score it. I bet you that it'd be $5 that you would score this at least a 9.0. Score it now. And be honest. Oh. Be honest.
I hesitate saying a perfect 10. But it's because it gives us more than the original gave us, because it did what every sequel or every remake should do. And that's give us elements of the story that the original was lacking. Not just shot-for-shot remake. Don't just give us more of the same. And for that reason, it's got to be a 9.5. You still get all of the Descent into Madness elements that the original had, and then a whole lot more. So, And amazing performances all around.
I mean, what an accomplishment. But what have I really done, though? All I've done is say to the world, let's go! Move! Catch me if you can. Waiter, Jesus Christ!
The only element that I was actually looking for that I wish I'd seen, and obviously in the original they couldn't have pulled it off because it would have been way too difficult, but I was looking for wings. I mean, that would have been cool to see, because they would have had a much easier time doing that than they would have done in 58. And I thought, what is the next thing they could give us that the original couldn't? I thought, I want to see Jeff Goldblum fly, and I think that was a missed opportunity.
What do you think, I'll fly? Am I becoming a 185-pound fly? No, I'm becoming something that never existed before.
Score it!
I enjoyed it. And I'd give it a 9.5. I didn't find anything really wrong with it.
Good. The world will want to know that.
You know what? I'll give it a 9.0. You guys put it 9.5. I love the movie. 9.0. I can't fault it for much, but, you know, I love the score. I love the cast. I love the effects. The Fly is, I would say, our number two remake from the 80s. The Thing has to be number one, but the Cronenberg's The Fly is definitely a very close second to Carpenter's The Thing. It's probably one of the best horror sci-fi remakes ever made, and if you've never seen it, you're really missing out. So remedy that shit. Remedy that shit immediately. The first thing you're going to see when you watch The Fly is that this is a Brooks Film production. Mel Brooks helped finance this movie. This was a closely guarded secret when the film came out because he didn't think audiences would take the movie seriously if they knew that he was involved. This was the king of comedy producing a horror sci-fi remake, and we owe him a huge debt for having the vision and the balls to go outside of his usual genre and finance such a great movie. Cronenberg wanted $750,000 to direct the film. Brooks and his team countered him with an offer of $1 million. They wanted him on board that much. Chris Wallace and his team had two options at the time The Fly was in pre-production. They could have done the effects for The Fly or the effects for Gremlins 2. Thank Christ they chose the former because they knew it would be more of a challenge. When the film was released, Jeff Goldblum wrote a letter to Vincent Price, who was 75 years old at the time. He wrote, "I hope you like it as much as I liked yours," and Price was reportedly very touched by the letter. We hope you enjoyed this retrospect on another Canadian classic horror. It has everything you would want in a genre film. An excellent cast, giving outstanding performances, cutting-edge practical effects, some memorable gore, and a fantastic finale. And until the next time, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you, and we're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101, Educating Your Fears.
As Jeff Goldblum will tell you, bringing back dinosaurs is a bad idea.
Wrong movie.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it starts off with the oohs and the ahs, yeah, and then there's running and the screaming.